My name is Irene Kurka and I welcome you to my podcast Neue Musik leben. This is a German podcast about contemporary music and mindset. But once in a while I do some episodes in English. I have studied classical singing, but I love singing contemporary music a lot. If you want to meet me or experience me in one of my concerts, please go to my website www.irenekurka.de. I will put this in the show notes for you. And also on this website, you can apply for my newsletter. In this podcast, I talk about themes and topics all around new music. I share with you behind the stage knowledge, insider knowledge, and I want you to bring closer the human beings out of the new music world. I'm very thankful for all your feedbacks and comments, and also very thankful that you tell your friends and colleagues about my podcast. Today I want to share with you the interview with the composer, the British composer Christopher Fox. I have been singing in London and I was able to meet Christopher there. Please enjoy the interview. Hello, Christopher Fox. I'm very, very happy to meet you here and that you're willing to answer my questions today.
I'm very happy to answer them.
How did you find your way into new and experimental music?
I found my way quite slowly, but I opened the door when I was 13 years old because almost by accident, I found a book called Ahead of the Game, Four Versions of the Avant-Garde by Calvin Tompkins, and it had a chapter on John Cage. And I read this and thought, this is very interesting, and I didn't really understand it, but I just put it in my mind as something that was interesting. And I was becoming interested in writing music at the same time. And about 4 or 5 years later, the two things started to come together, and I began to know enough new music to understand what Cage was doing and to understand that some of the things he'd done were things that I was becoming interested in doing.
So when did you start composing?
Well, also when I was 12 or... But I mean, it was not really composing. It was more writing notes on paper. Just because I could. And I could read music and I played the piano very badly. I played the recorder and I played the French horn very badly. And so I started writing things on paper and then gradually started translating them into actual sounds. So it was a kind of, it's a typical, I suppose, classical music route that you begin with notation and then you find the sounds rather than starting with the sounds and then finding a notation.
What represents good new music for you?
I think anything that seems to me to be authentic. I don't really mind what it is. I remember reading an interview with Cargill, and he said that whatever we do as composers, we have to remember that we are taking people's time. And I think as long as I have a sense that the person who has made the music understands that and takes responsibility for the fact that she or he is taking away 10 or 20 or 50 minutes of my life, it's okay.
And what are the qualities you most appreciate in performers you work with?
In performers, I think it has to be fantasy, really, and the willingness to take risks, and obviously not just a sort of conventional competence as players, but also they kind of completely inhabit the sound world that they make.
I know that you're also composing for the human voice, and since I'm a singer, I'm always curious, how is this for you, and what is special or challenging about writing for the human voice?
I don't think it's challenging at all. I think it's the best.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's... Because the other thing about my musical education always involved singing from when I was very small. And my sisters and my father and my mother and I, we used to sing together.
Cool.
Well, kind of not cool at all, I think. But we just did. And so I've always sung, and I've always tried to work with singers. And I think there's... I remember when I was at university, I had a friend from Huddersfield, and Huddersfield has a great choir, the Huddersfield Choral Society. And he said the moment for him when he realised that he wanted to devote his life to music was the first time his mother took him to a rehearsal, and he sat in the hall. There was the choir on the stage, and they made this first sound in whatever piece they were rehearsing, and he just thought, wow. And I think it's that quality, it's the lack of mediation in the voice, that it's you hear the whole body, and that's...
So is there a difference for you composing for the human voice or instrumentalists?
Well, I think I try to make instrumentalists become like singers. Okay. I think that's my project.
Cool. So how do your friends, family, colleagues and audiences react to your sort of music, and how do you deal with their reactions?
Oh, that's a very good question. It varies. And I mean, my family are very... I think my sisters are very supportive. My friends, I mean, lots of my friends are obviously in the musical world. My friends who are not have a variety of reactions. I mean, some of them just don't listen to anything I do. And I think that's okay. Because I don't go to see them work either. So it's varied.
And do you think there are prejudice against new music? And if so, how do you want to see things change? And what are you doing to bring a new attitude into this world?
I don't think... I mean, my friends and my family, I don't think have conservative attitudes necessarily. Some friends do, and they're the ones I tend not to invite. I just don't tell them that I'm doing things. Because some people, think radically, some people are innately conservative, some people don't think that... I mean, there are lots of people who have an idea about music that it should just be comfortable, and it should just be something for the background, and for that, those people are not going to like what I do.
Is there anything you wish for the new music scene?
Not really. I do think we live at a particularly good moment, because there is so much activity. I mean, in a way that I was talking to somebody about it this morning, the only thing that's missing maybe now is that criticism is perhaps not as intense as it used to be. And I think sometimes because there is so much, it becomes almost too easy to say, oh yes, no, that's wonderful, I love what you're doing, when what you really mean is what you're doing is terrible and I don't understand why you're doing it at all. And I think in the past maybe there was a more intense critical climate than there is today.
And what is the advantage of that?
Well, I think it's good for artists to be challenged
mm-hmm.
about what they do, and not just about the way in which they approach what they do, because, you know, at one level, we can all be challenged to be technically better at what we do, but, you know, sort of aesthetic challenge and a challenge that is to do with the position of our music in the world. And I think it's important to think about that all the time.
So now I would like to know from you, do you have any time management or rituals or anything, how you divide your day, or can you suggest something to us what is maybe very helpful?
No, I don't think I can. I have discovered gradually over the years that I work best, with a sort of most energy in the morning, and then I become less critical the longer the day goes on. So I often have to throw away everything I do after about 6 o'clock in the evening.
What are you thankful for today?
Within music, I'm thankful that there are so many great performers who are involved in the same sort of music that I'm involved in. And I'm thankful that a lot of the things which are useful to us, the people who work in whatever this area of music is called, you know, quite a lot of the support structures which have been there for a long time and which one sometimes thinks are going to be taken away, that they are still surviving, so that, you know, we still have fantastic radio stations with fantastic engineers, and we have still some state support and support from foundations, and I mean, we have fantastic audiences, there are lots of great halls. And I mean, personally, the thing for me that in a way I'm more thankful about for really than anything else is that because of the way technology has evolved, the thing that I really couldn't do when I was 19, 20, which was make the sort of electronic music that I wanted to make, I can do now because the technology has become so much simpler. I was so incompetent in old-fashioned tape studios, and now I can just about do it.
Amazing. Who or what has played the greatest role in shaping you, and what inspires you?
Well, I think it was probably my father, because he was intensely interested in music, even though he was a lawyer. And I think during my teens, we kind of went on a musical journey together, because he became interested in the music that I was discovering. And that was a sort of return for at the beginning of, you know, when I was about 10, 11, 12, when I started becoming interested in music, it was his taste that shaped mine to begin with. So he loved Wagner and Mahler and Beethoven and Bach, Messiaen, and so on. And then later on, I introduced him to Stockhausen and Berio and Steve Reich and Roxy Music. And they did this sort of... he's been dead for 25 years, so I have managed somehow without him, but I still think of it... I mean, he's the person I think of.
Really?
As my...
So you kind of converse with him.
My key audience member.
How nice. What does it mean for you to be true to yourself or authentic in the music business? And how do you keep true to yourself?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure I always succeed. I think sometimes in the past I have taken on things which I perhaps were not really meant for me. But mostly I just do it because... because it's important, I think. Because I do think that I am not a composer as a job. I mean, it's not... I mean, and there are composers who undoubtedly work as if it's an office job, and they take whatever they can get, and they do whatever they can. And they have agents and publishers who encourage them to do that. And because I have other means of economic support, thanks to my university and teaching and some other things, I can do exactly what I want. So it's foolish then at the end of a year to look back and think, well, I did that thing, I did that one because it earns, you know, because the, economically it seems like a good idea.
Freedom.
Well, I do have complete freedom. I mean, I think if you have complete freedom, it's then even more annoying if you then look back and think, well, I shouldn't have done that, and or you know, if that was a complete waste of my time. But mostly I don't think that.
What does success mean for you?
Well, success, I mean, as much far as, it, you know, again, my friends and family, going back to your earlier question, I think often look at what I do and don't see it as success. They just see it as getting along. I mean, I think success means that you can more or less do what you want. And that is an incredible privilege. Really. Also, success sometimes means that things come along which you simply weren't expecting, but because there are people who know about me and I don't know about them, they then come up with ideas that I hadn't thought of. And sometimes those turn out to be really tremendous ideas, tremendous directions to go in.
What drives you forward, and do you have a vision?
No. My vision is to do the best work I possibly can. But I don't... I mean, I used to worry about this when I was much younger, that there were composers from the past who, you know... I was telling my students last week about Varese, and you know, there is a composer who had this... absolute vision in the 1920s and 30s, as a result of which he stopped composing because he realised he could not realise his vision. And I think that was maybe a waste of his creative energy, that it went into frustration rather than going into, you know, because he could have found other ways around the impasse that he seemed to find himself in. But... I think vision is, again, looking out into the world, vision is quite dangerous. In that there are people in the United Kingdom who have had visions of what they wanted to do politically in the last 20 years, and we're now about to suffer the consequences of those. I could talk about that at great length.
We are ready at the last question.
Hooray!
Which tip would you like to give young artists?
I think the most... Well, I mean, I give young artists lots of tips, which mostly, thank heaven, they ignore. I think there are two... You know, there are two or three things which I think are holding lots of younger composers back from doing the best work that they could, and of which the most important is music processing software, you know, because I think whether it's Finale or Sibelius or whichever, you know, Lilypond, whichever, all those softwares get in the way of the connection between what you have in your ears and what and the music you want to make. So I would say switch off your computers and sing or play, you know, make sounds, and then think about maybe switching a computer on. But don't start with a screen, because I think that doesn't seem to produce interesting results at all. And fundamentally, start from the thing you want to achieve. How the thing will sound. I think that's always the only way to create good music is to think about, you know, what will happen when the airwaves start to move in response to the things that you have in your head.
You had some other tips. You said this is the first. I'm curious.
Well, that's two.
Now.
I think that's two tips.
Okay, two.
I mean, Feldman said a wonderful thing, and I don't believe he actually necessarily lived it out himself, but he did. He got close. Which is, he said somewhere that his Hebraic commandment was to know thy instrument, but obviously know thy instruments. I think. But he was, I mean, he limited it because he didn't regard accordions as worthwhile instruments, and he didn't regard block flute as worthwhile instruments or mandolins. You know, he had this very narrow register of instruments. And I think it's more a case of, you know, whatever the instrument is. So the piece I'm making at the moment, the instrument that it began from was about a carrier bag, plastic carrier bag full of dried leaves from the garden, which I was just, and it took me a while, day, to learn how to really play that well before I started recording it.
Cool.
And it'll then end up in as a part of the piece for you.
Oh, I'm excited about the score. Well, thank you very much for taking the time with me and answering all my questions.
Thank you very much.
I hope that this interview inspired you. I'm looking forward to your ideas and suggestions through email or Facebook. Thank you that you're here with me. I hope that you liked it and it inspired you. Thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.